Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey everyone, hope you're doing well. Welcome back to another edition of the Ariel Helwani Basketball Show. Very excited about today's episode. We are talking to one of the greatest basketball studio analysts of all time. He was a pretty damn good player as well. He's Kenny the Jet Smith, of course, won two NBA championships with the Houston Rockets in 1994 and 1995. And then, you know, after his playing days were done, transitioned over to the world of television and has been a part of the great Inside the NBA team for the last two plus decades, along with the legendary Ernie Johnson, Charles Barkley, and Shaquille O'Neal. In my opinion, the greatest studio team of all time, the greatest sports studio show of all time. I guess I should say North America because that's where I live, but you know, I feel like I watch a lot of global sports and nothing comes close to what these guys have done, especially for as long as they have done it. And so they all play their role and they do a great job. And what a time it is to talk to Kenny Smith, because wouldn't you know it, he's got a book that came out this week. Yes, it's called Talk of Champions, Stories of the People Who Made Me. And it's about, quite simply, all his interactions and great stories with the legends that he has been around throughout his career. The likes of Michael Jordan, who he was a teammate with at North Carolina. The likes of Bill Russell, who coached him while he was a member of the Sacramento Kings back in the day. The likes of Dean Smith and Shaquille O'Neal and Charles Barkley. Just tremendous stuff from a guy who has lived quite the life, especially in basketball. Some great advice, some great stories about the inside the NBA days. And we also pick his brain a little bit on the current basketball playoff landscape, the Knicks, his pick for the finals matchup coming up in June. So a lot of great stuff covered with the one and only Kenny the Jet Smith. So without further ado, here is my conversation with the man who just came out with his own book and was in the news for some other things as well this week. We get to that right off the top. Enjoy it. Here is the chat with Kenny the Jet Smith. This is very exciting. We have one of the greatest basketball analysts of all time joining us. And now you can add soon to be New York Times best-selling author to that list as well. The book just came out this week. It's called Talk of Champions, Stories of the People Who Made Me by the great Kenny the Jet Smith. Of course, you know him from Inside the NBA, TNT. You know him from the Houston Rockets. You know him from North Carolina. But now he is an author and he's kind enough to join us on the program today. Kenny, thank you for doing this. I appreciate it very much.
Man, thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. Great to talk to you for the first time. And if I can ask off the bat, you seem like a very smart guy. And if I can give you a great compliment right off the bat, you know, when you're in the news, even if it's like TMZ type news, when you have a book coming out, that seems like tremendous promotional work on your part. Was this all calculated, all this stuff that came out this week? Because I feel like that's a masterclass on your part, if so.
No, I wish I was that smart. I just tell you, you go to Miami, you stay on a beach. That's about all you do. I didn't think that me being on a beach was news.
Miami and you hang out on the beach and you have a book coming out like 3 days later. That's incredible stuff. That's great timing. If so, someone's looking down on you.
I guess there is no question, man. No question.
Are you shocked? I know you're doing 1,000 interviews this week. What percentage of the interviews are about your photos on the beach?
I would say maybe just only like 15%. That's
oh,
all.
That's you it.
Know. Yeah, yeah. It's not. No. I mean, most people are. I mean, I like I said, I'm just shocked. There was 10,000 people on the beach that day. Like,
yeah.
So almost, it's not like unusual. So I don't know what's so unusual about that, but. I guess people find it interesting. I don't know.
Did you know that the guys would bring it up on the show? Because famously, you have said there's no production meetings, right? You guys don't talk beforehand.
Yeah. Oh, or at no, least... I had no idea. I mean, I know. I kind of figured if you're like if one of us says something that is you know makes news outside of the show or does something that people would view as news outside the show, which is still hard for me to believe. Like I said, that me just walking on the beach is news, but I think I know something's going to happen or one of us are going to say something if it's in reverse. So I didn't know what was going to be said, but I know something's going to be said because it became news for some reason.
Right. One last thing on that. You mentioned Shaq was with you, but I didn't see him in the photos. Was he like grabbing a drink or something?
Oh well, he wasn't with me every place. I
okay,
was,
all right.
But he was with me. He wasn't with me every place. But we did go to Miami at the same time. How about that?
I love it. Why did you write this book now? Why did this make sense? Why did you write it? And also, it's a very unique book, which I would love for you to talk about. It's not just like, you know, when I was 8, I did this. It's really talking about the people who have been in your life who have given you great advice. And boy, oh boy, have you been around some legends. Why did you go with this format as well?
Well, honestly, it initially started when all of the, people have told me my whole, oh, you should write a book my whole life. Write a book. And then I always thought I could write a good article, not really a book about my life. Like, it'd be a great article. And then, you know, when the social injustice was going on heavy, you know, in our lifetime for the first time at such a rate. And then when George Floyd happened and the players walked off from the Milwaukee Bucks and I walked off the set and said I would, you know, join solidarity with the players at that moment. My literary agent called me and was like, you have a book. And I was like, really, why? She said, why'd you walk off? And I said, well, I really walked off because, not because of that moment, but all the people who made me, and there it was. I was like, it was a collection of all the moments from Bill Russell, Dean Smith, Michael Jordan, which made me walk off at that moment, around Charles, around Shaq. So everything was a collection of all of those people. And then I was like, wow, you know, there's stories that I use on my daily life from those people that I didn't realize that I use so frequently about sport, about business, about life, about raising kids, about culture. And so instead of making it a book about chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, I just named every chapter after them. And I scared Charles and Shaq when I told him I was writing a tell-all book. Huh. But I was like, it's a tell-all book about everything great I learned from them. And if I knew that at 20 years old, man, how my life would have been different and, you know, and how much knowledge I would have been able to bestow and do. So that's why I wrote it. And I was like, the people around the world should know this and feel better about themselves and probably know why they react in certain ways when things happen and positively in their life and how they get there. And they'd be like, oh, Michael Jordan does that. Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, wow, Shaq does that. Oh, Dean Smith. And I think that's where I wrote it.
I love it. And I also love that you're doing it a little differently because it's, again, not just chapter 1, 2, 3, 4. If there was something that you could tell the 20-year-old version of you, perhaps something that someone told you later in life that has stuck with you, what is some advice that you would tell yourself as you were about to embark on this great basketball and then television career?
Well, the first part would be knowing what my parents had told me, because it really starts with my mom and dad. You know, they bestowed the equality to listen in me. Being a listener is much more important because most of us want to get our opinion out. And being able to listen and hear what other people are going through and why they're going through gives you empathy. It may not always give you sympathy, but you always will understand, well, they have that perspective because their life has guided them that way. I understand it now. I understand the choices that are being made better. And so being a listener is the most important part about, I think, navigating your life, because it allows you to understand why others make decisions that could affect you.
We'll never forget that episode of Inside the NBA when you walked off the set in August of 2020. And one thing that I learned while reading the book was that I think most people thought you left, like you literally left the building, but you stayed in the back and waited for the show to be over so that you can talk to the guys, because you didn't tell them beforehand that you were going to do this. Why did you feel the need to do that?
Well, I did feel I needed to let them know that in that moment, I didn't, you know, I was making an individual choice. And when you're making an individual choice that you feel is morally correct or socially correct, you don't ask for permission. You just do it. I had no idea in that moment I was going to do that. The reason I did it, honestly, is because the day felt too normal. It was, I walked into the studio, the security guard, "Hey, Kenny, let me in." The person who was at the gate coming in, production people, "Hey, how you doing?" And Ernie started the show like he started every other show. And I just felt it was too normal. But I stayed because I felt that I could have, after hindsight, I was really going to walk off and walk out. And I said, maybe I blindsided them, but I wanted them to understand that if they wanted to participate in that, I could have given them opportunity. But I was making an individual choice, nothing to do with them. And I didn't make it an hour before I got there. I made it in that moment. And that was it. So I wanted to stay to let them know that.
It did seem like of the entire crew, Charles was the one that was maybe a little bit bothered by it. How long did it take for you guys to clear the air on that?
The next time I saw him.
Oh, that was it. Okay. So you guys don't hold grudges.
We don't wait. No, we don't wait. I mean, I'm not going to like I said, they're like family members. Like I have brothers, so I wouldn't say it's a brother, but it's very close to that. I see them just as much as my brother. And I'm not going to let anything fester. I'm not that type of person. So I'm going to directly answer in Charles the same way. And I just let him know. I'm like, well, I don't need permission when I'm doing something that I feel is socially or morally correct, or I'm not going to always know that I need to inform someone. I need to move in that moment, because that moment could be gone. And so I didn't feel any way about him. He thought he was blindsided at the moment. And he said, "Yeah, you could have told us." And he said it publicly. And I was like, well, I don't need permission in that respect when I feel I'm moving in that direction.
I think some people might say, oh, that was probably the toughest day of your TV career. But you guys have been on the air for, you know, two decades plus. And, you know, you don't need me to say this to you, but you guys are the voice of the NBA, in my opinion. You're the greatest studio show in the history of American sports television. You're the gold standard. You're the moral compass of the NBA. And you've had to have some pretty tough shows. I can think of several just off the top of my head right now. What, in your opinion, was the toughest? Which one? Because, you know, there was obviously the post-Kobe death one, this one. You've had some really, really tough moments where you guys have been able to just nail it every single time, the right tone, the right responses, authentic, genuine. In your opinion, which was the toughest day at work?
I don't think they're tough. I think they're emotional, as you said. With, like you said, the death of Kobe Bryant, you know, doing a show inside of the at that time, well, Crypto.com Arena, and no one's there, empty seats, and just a spotlight on his jersey. And we're doing a show, and we're bringing in all the Laker great past from past and present. And we've all had some type of relationship, some not as big as others, that's like Shaq, but the guy affected all of us. And so I think all of those have been emotional shows. What makes it authentic, as you said, and you see it, is that, again, you have to be a listener. Mm. Because, you know, even when George Floyd happens, Shaquille O'Neal has a very military background. He's a law enforcement officer himself. So his reverence and viewpoint about police officers that he particularly deals with on a daily basis is much different from what I grew up in and did it in Queens, New York. And so I have to have empathy for his possible reverence at times for law enforcement that I might not possess. And I have to have empathy for that. And so now when you're listening as a viewer, you're getting a different viewpoints, and people are sitting next to each other who care about each other that might not always agree totally in the perspective of the way things are met. So that's what you see, I think, on our show.
Do you remember the first time you were approached about being on Inside the NBA?
Yes. You know how even now at times we because of, you know, the new technology and with Zoom and everything, players don't come in particularly as much. But I know you're old enough to know that we have players that come in particularly. They'll come onto the show live. We used to every year have players come in live when they lost. And I was one of those players. And they asked me, hey, you know, if you ever want to do this full time when you retire, you know, you'll be really good at it. I thought that was the parting gift that they said to everyone. Like, hey, you know, you come on the show, you'll be great. And they had a gist that I was going to retire. And they called me. And I was like, whoa, yeah, sure, let's do it. Let's try it. And that's how it started. It was a parting gift that I thought they gave to everyone, but they actually said, no, we only gave that to you.
Have you ever been super close to leaving? In the past, there have been some talks, you taking the GM job here, coaching, front office. Has there ever been a time where you were seriously considered leaving for one of those gigs?
Yeah. There were a couple of times that I was close. With the Knicks was probably the closest. Being a New Yorker, you know, having an opportunity to be, you know, be part of the Knicks organization was probably my closest time. And it was getting close. You know, I was almost, you know, getting to the point where, meaning the ownership, and then the person who was hiring me got fired, like literally the week of that. They were supposed to bring me in to possibly figure out a deal. And that was the closest that I...
Was that with Phil Jackson or was that post-Phil Jackson?
That was post-Phil Jackson.
Okay, yeah. So who was the one that got fired?
And, you know, without going through, you know, all of the, you know, it was close. I'll leave it as that.
Okay. All right, fair enough. And you would have been at peace? Like if it went through, you would have been at peace? You'd have taken the job?
Yes, because it was the Knicks, and I'm a New Yorker. It's like growing up in your hometown and being the team you've rooted for your whole life, you're getting to be a part of, you know. Mm. I think that would have been, you know, a different scenario.
Is that something that you would still like to do before it's all said and done?
I think that if it's basketball, it's me. I'm super content in what I do, but I also know that my knowledge that I have is also applicable in a lot of different areas. So I have relationships with almost every agent in the NBA. I have multiple players that call me on a daily basis. Yo, I'm working on my game. You know, what could I do differently? I have owners, presidents of team that I talk to on a daily. So, you know, I think that it could be a possibility, but it's not as like forthright in my face as it used to be.
And just curious, coach or like front office job, what interests you more in a hypothetical world? Like, because two very different gigs, right? And very hard to do them.
I think I think at this point, because I've gotten more relationships, it actually tends to lead toward front office, because you know everyone. Like, there's not a player, I would say half the NBA players, either I've seen since they were in high school because of what I do in the AAU and college basketball. Every single agent, there's not an agent that, you know, hasn't run across me or had some type of interaction. There's not a owner, general manager, staff that's not in that front office that either I helped, like, hey, you know, if you want this job, you should call this person. You know, that job. So I think, like I said, that would probably be an easier move.
So at this point, you're on the air. Like I said, it's authentic. It's real. That's what people love about you guys. I'm wondering how you navigate this, because this is still something that I try to navigate myself and don't often do a great job. You have a great relationship with someone, whether it's a star player, a coach, GM, whatever, and you have to go on the air and you have to be critical of them. How do you navigate the waters when that night, the next day, you get the text and be like, yo, man, I can't believe, you know, you said that, or, you know, I thought we were boys, or this and that. Because we've seen it publicly happen with Shaq and KD, and Charles obviously is very critical as well. And I think you do a great job of, you know, never offending, but being fair and you know, unbiased and truthful. But how do you deal with those situations if they ever come up?
Well, with me, my rule of thumb is real simple. And you could have a problem with being, you know, critical, but that would be the same way if you have a problem with coaching, because I never question your passion, your internal fortitude, or your drive. I'll never say, oh, he doesn't have the passion for the game. I can't measure that. But I can say your ass don't get back on defense. And here it is, boom. And I run to the big board and I show you that you didn't run back, and that you let the Joker beat you up court when you have to be faster than the Joker. The Joker would admit that you're not as fast as him. that he's not as fast as you. So for me, it's always about never questioning anything that I physically can't show that you're not performing at. And if I do that, I'm going to be critical, but I'm going to back it up. And you can't fool me, because I know what the film, I know how to evaluate film. I think that's what I'm best at. I don't think anybody on television can evaluate the game on the film like I do. So you can't lie to me, brother. So you can't lie.
Okay, so along those lines, could I ask you this? We're speaking on Wednesday morning. Game 5, Knicks Heat is this evening, Wednesday night. If you're in the locker room, if you're a member of the Knicks, and you hear Julius Randle after game 4 saying, maybe they want it more than us, do you think that he is talking about himself, or do you think he is talking about the rest of the team and trying to motivate them? Because I've seen both, you know, sides of the coin here, where a lot of people are like, you're waving the white flag. Patrick Ewing would never say something like that. And I've seen some people say like, no, he's just trying to like call out his teammates. How would you interpret a statement like that?
I would say that as a team president, if he said us, I would say, well, what does that mean and what are you going to do about it? Because quantify that. Quantify the fact that you feel that they want it more than you. Because one thing about that, that's an internal feeling that is hard to measure. But if you quantify it, like if I tell you, hey, you're not working hard enough, you're like, what do you mean? I'm working hard. Like, no, because you could get off the court in 7 seconds. You're getting up in 9. So here he is. Can you get up in 7? Are you hurt? So I would ask him to quantify that. So when he comes into the locker room, everybody's clear that we're all in this box together. And then if you're stepping out of this box by not doing what Julius thinks this is, or he's not doing it, we could hold you accountable and everybody else accountable. What do you mean? Because I have no idea what he means by that. Mm.
One thing I love about the book, a lot of great stories about MJ, and everyone loves MJ stories. Obviously, you were close friends, teammates at North Carolina, and there's some great stuff about you on campus and meeting him and how country he was and how New York you were. And it's just a fascinating read. So kudos on that, and thank you for sharing that. Have you ever tried to mend the fences between MJ and Barkley, or do you stay out of that?
Well, you know, the last time that they were together and took a picture, I did it. The very last time. And I think there's a picture of it in the book. We were in a hotel in New York, and I guess someone told Michael that I was in the hotel restaurant area, and he came in, he said, "Hey, I heard you were down here. I went to say what's up." So he says, and I was like, "Charles is over here." And at the time that I said it, as I was saying it, I realized that they, you know, still had a little bit of a quirk going on. And I was like, "Hey, let's get a picture." And we take the picture. And so they talked for about 5 minutes, and then Michael came back, talked to me for more, and then he left. And then I realized, I was like, they hadn't talked in 3 years. I had realized that. But it wasn't until afterwards that I realized it was that long, because I see him so much, Charles, and we talk about Michael so much through basketball and through life. And I had obviously talked to Michael before. I didn't realize it had gone that long. And yes, I probably feel that I could do that, because I understand both of them to some degree. I understand Michael from a 17 to 21 age, the vulnerable age of life. And I understand Charles now. So I understand why they are like they are in that sense. And it's so fixable, but neither one of them will take the first step to fix it.
And by the way, how long ago was that meeting where you took the photo?
That was probably now 5-6 years. That was definitely pre-COVID.
Damn. That is crazy. Just two more minutes with you, and appreciate the time very much. Can I just ask, and obviously you're a part of TNT's coverage throughout the playoffs. TNT has second round coverage, and of course, Eastern Conference Finals coverage. You'll be a part of all of that, and looking forward to that very much. Does the NBA have a problem in this regard? You know, the regular season is long. It's 82 games. Then you have the play-in tournament, and some might say parity is good, but, you know, you have 8 seeds and 7 seeds and teams that were 10 seeds and 9 seeds now making these long runs. What's the point of the regular season when you can just get in and, you know, kind of save yourself and go on these long runs? Is that a problem, or do you think that's a great thing because it says to the world, like, anything can happen once the playoffs start?
I think this year is just more like the NCAA. And I wouldn't even liken it to saving yourself. I would liken it to free agency. The fact that players move so quickly, like Kevin Durant, you know, and, you know, moving, and Mikal Bridges, and all of these guys are just moving at such a fast pace because of free agency. When a guy is in his last year as a contract or in a contract dispute, it allows the freedom of movement, allows teams to, like, overnight be in contention now. And I think that has more to do in it, maybe with the exception of the Lakers, you know, when you have LeBron and AD, who kind of had not saved themselves or were hurt and came back. But everyone else, you know, Miami Heat weren't saving themselves. They just got hot at the right time. Like they weren't saying, they were playing. Jimmy Butler was playing a lot of games, Tyler Hero and Victor Oladipo. And then they fall into, you know, these guys getting hurt and some other guys stepping up. So I think that it's more NCAA tournament a little bit that year, but free agency has more to do with the parity than anything else, which I thought was going to be something bad, which is actually turning to be something good, because there are six cities right now saying, we could win it all.
Right.
They really believe it. You know, like, we could win it. Still with eight teams left. And when it started, there were probably eight cities saying, including like Milwaukee, that got bounced, like, we could win it all.
Very true. Last thing, two words. Who's playing in the finals?
Denver. And I hate that, man. I almost it's hard for me even to say that, you know, with Denver. But they, to me, they're the most complete team. They are the most complete team. They don't have all the best players, but they are the most complete. And if I'm going off of that, I would say the most complete team, I still think the Boston Celtics are going to get there.
Okay. We think alike. That's my pick as well. So I appreciate that very much. The book is called Talk of Champions, Stories of the People Who Made Me, by the great Kenny Smith. Absolute legend. Massive honor for me to speak to you, Kenny. All the best. Congrats on all your success. Well done on everything that you've accomplished, keeping it real, doing it, you know, your way. Well done on the pictures over the weekend as well. Well done on the book. Congratulations. And right. Keep doing your thing, my man.
All right. Thank you.
All right, that was great stuff. Like I said, Inside the NBA, the best ever, and he's a big part of that as well. The chemistry is great. I'm envious of it as someone who has, you know, had an opportunity to do some TV. The camaraderie, the looseness of it all, just how they feed off each other. There's no ego. It's tremendous. Sometimes I've actually watched TNT just to watch Inside the NBA, just to watch the halftime show, the postgame show, and not even watch the game. You go out of your way. It's must-see TV. And how many other shows can you say that about in this day and age, or ever, to be honest? Go check out the book. It's great. It's called Talk of Champions, Stories of the People Who Made Me, by the one and only Kenny Smith. It's a really fun read. It's a light read. And there's a lot of great anecdotes about some of the legends that he has been around for the last, you know, 40-plus years. Tremendous stuff. Appreciate his time very much, and appreciate all of you very much who continue to support this show. Thank you so very much for continuing to download, follow, review, subscribe, comment, engage, all those things and more. It goes a long way. Trust me, it does. So thank you. Once again, thanks to the production team. Thanks to Kenny Smith. Thanks to all of you. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Enjoy the games this weekend. I'll talk to you next week.